Riot Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Hooded Bookroom Studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Net Brown on the Pod with your host, Mike Stoffler, Mike Moncada. Episode 122, The Subjugated Beast by R.R. Ryan. The story of a girl.
So should we,
Oh boy.
All right. So should we fess up?
We should fess up. We have both read this week's book, this month's book, but it was a little while ago.
For you, and it was like 2 weeks for me,
I think. 2 weeks for you and
a month for you.
4 weeks for me. But we're going to talk about it anyway.
Because that's what we do.
That's what we do. And we're going to feel okay about it because we're going to be talking about two more books by this same author. And hopefully it'll all come rushing back. And we'll, by the end of these three episodes, we will have made some sort of justice to this
author. Our apologies in advance to R.R. Stein.
Yes.
No,
R.R. Ryan. So we're reading today, we read for today, The Subjugated Beast. R.R. Ryan, which, unlike we mentioned in our last episode, that's not the book we said we were going to read last time.
Oh, what were we going to read?
I sneakily substituted this one because this is the first of the three.
Okay.
Apparently these three books that we're reading get better as you go.
Okay.
So I figured it'd be better for us to start with the baseline.
Yeah.
And end up with what some people say is not R.R. Stein's R.R. Ryan's masterpiece, because I don't believe R.R. Ryan wrote a masterpiece, but his or her best book.
Or him, her.
Or he, she, or there.
So apparently this is a rediscovered gem in the horror.
Yeah, I think I mentioned last time when we were down in the basement, the list by Carl Edward Wagner, where he sadistically decided to put this list, construct this list of the best horror novels, the best non-supernatural horror novels, the best supernatural horror novels, and the best science fiction horror novels. And he populated these lists that he published in Twilight Zone magazine in 1980 with freaking impossible to find books. I mean, really, really obscure.
The bastard.
The bastard. And then he died in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. This list has propelled lots of nerdy readers such as myself and nerdy publishing houses such as the Dancing Twatara Press to seek them out and then, in the case of the press, actually find them and publish them. So I'm grateful to the Dancing Twatara Press that these books are available for less than $500 for a
rich copy. Thank you, Dancing Twatara Press.
So we decided to read R.R. Ryan, the one author who appears on all three of these mini lists that Carl Edward Wagner generated.
Do you know anything about R.R. Ryan?
Just what is written up in the introduction to these books. Nobody knows who he is, and the person who was it John Phelan?
Yeah.
Who wrote the introduction has done quite a bit of research as well as other researchers of popular literature in the early 20th century. And there's a theory that R.R. Ryan is actually a woman.
And when was it published? 1938?
What does it say?
68.
38. Yeah. So it was published just before the war. Another thing about this way this publishing happened is we don't know about this in America, but in Britain at the time there was these things called lending libraries, where you could go in and rent books.
Mm-hmm. We have that here.
Yeah, but it was apparently more popular. It was a strange concept to me, But R.R. Ryan would write these books, and they would be for these libraries. It's kind of like those video game, those movie companies that would make direct-to-video movies in the 80s that would be sort of like a popular movie, but not actually a popular movie.
Or sort of like shopping at Aldi's.
Yeah. They're,
Baker's Choice.
Yes. Yeah. Or, you know, those terrible, like, schlocky horror films from the 80s and early 90s that were, you know, about ticks or fleas or dentists or things like that. Made mostly to just fill the shelves of video rental stores.
Okay.
That's what these books were kind of like.
Oh.
So they weren't ever considered high literature. And once they left the library, I mean, I don't think you could really buy them at a bookstall. You could just go get them from the libraries, these libraries.
Hmm.
At any rate, so R.R. Ryan wrote a bunch of these books and then evaporated. Sometime in the 50s.
I wonder if R.R. Ryan was somebody famous who was writing under a nom de plume.
A nom de plume. Possibly, but I kind of doubt it.
Oh.
Well, I think there's some speculation that suicide might have been involved.
Mm.
So there are some traces out there. R.R. Ryan is almost certainly a pseudonym. And there are some indications that... it was a daughter of an editor, a more well-to-do editor, who may have actually helped like form these books.
Hmm.
So maybe they may actually be co-authored. But at any rate, we have this series of, I think he or she wrote 4, 5, 6 books. We're reading 3 of them. The Dancing Totara Press publishes at least 1 other one, which is by far the least of the least of the group. What the heck is it called? I can't even remember. But the best one, which we'll be reading third, the one that people say is the one worth reading.
So do you think we should do a really quick synopsis? And then I'm curious why in the blurb that we read says mm-hmm. that it calls it spatterpunk.
Yes.
Or splatterpunk or spatter?
Splatterpunk, yes.
I like spatterpunk. I like batterpunk. It's like all pancake batter.
Some waffle batter, maybe some beer batter for some fish. Anyway.
Well, the drink's definitely kicking in.
Oh, dear. we'll talk about the... people are trying to, retcon this book into the prehistory of the splatterpunk movement, if you could call it a movement of the 80s, in horror, which was to be super gory. And I have my doubts.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I buy it.
But yeah, so the synopsis.
So the synopsis is?
This young woman whose name is Curl, nickname is Curl.
What's this thing before? There's something before this.
Oh, there's this little bit at the beginning of the book, which is about this... The family stone, yes, that has this history of violence in the women.
Spouses getting murdered.
Spouses getting murdered, yes. And so this is the first thing you read in the book, and that feeds into the slow reveal that the rest of the book is. This family, of course, is our protagonist, Curl's ancestors.
Yes. So basically she's been given an inheritance that she... cannot grab hold of unless she goes to live with her uncle, and yes. basically be subjugated to his
beastly
whims.
Yes, this is funny. This book. Curl. Her mother dies.
She goes to live with the uncle.
She goes to live with the uncle. The uncle
has a boyfriend who doesn't want her to go.
Yeah, he has a bad feeling. He seems to be an up and comer, but he's, you know, doesn't.
He's in doctor school.
He's in doctor school, as they say.
That's how they say it in England.
Yes, but he hasn't made that doctor school money yet. So she's going to take the bird in hand. Although that bird is not yet really in hand either.
And this, her uncle Paul is the uncle, and he has a wife Beatrice, her aunt. She's never met them until this...
just before
her mother dies. And she feels sorry for the aunt.
Yes. So out of this this weird mixture of altruism to help this aunt and frankly, greed. Yeah, she wants to get her inheritance.
So she goes.
It's funny. It just occurred to me that she's really going. She's thinking she's getting one inheritance, but she may be getting another as well.
Dun, dun, dun. And she's upfront about her greed.
Yeah, she's
like, I like want money, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And
so.
And that, I will be able to do what I want.
Exactly. So that's one of the things that I liked about this book, because in genre fiction of this time, the characters can be pretty thin. Curl is not thin. She is a complex...
She's a beefy gal.
Huh?
She's a beefy gal.
She's a beefy gal? Beefy gal. She's, you know, she has... she's actually quite forthright about her motivations. And she knows that, you know, she's doesn't call herself greedy, but she doesn't hide it either.
Yeah.
She wants what she wants. She's an impetuous youth.
So she goes to live with aunt and uncle,
mm-hmm.
and her boyfriend is miffed. And sidebar, he starts seeing this ghost figure that is apparently the grandfather, who was just a mean old cuss.
Yeah.
Who set up the will to F around with Curl.
Yeah.
Basically.
Exactly.
And who was disapproving of Curl's mother, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he also, so this is ominous for the boyfriend, because he's knows something's up, and the appearance of this ghost presupposes that something bad will happen to the boyfriend John, and something does. There's like an accident of some sort.
Yeah, puts him out of his
picture for a while.
For a little while, yeah. Meanwhile, the uncle is beginning to. Carefully manipulate Curl into isolation. They move household. They move from London to Wales. He leaves a false forwarding address and goes to this creepy-ass castle out in the middle of nowhere. And
he fires the cook.
Chapter by chapter, event by event, Curl is more and more isolated. All this time,
even though she's feels close to the aunt, and
mm-hmm.
notices that uncle's is very strange with the aunt. He only lets her eat raw meat.
Yes,
he is mean to her.
Yep.
There's other things going on that we don't really know about, but
mm-hmm.
But she still feels sorry for the aunt. And feels like there's something really good in the aunt that's not. She's being subjugated as well.
She's being subjugated like a beast. In the working out, then the uncle Paul sneakily at when he's got Curl good and isolated, he injects her with something and robs her of the use of her legs, so she can't walk now. She literally cannot go anywhere. They put boards over her window, and he becomes more and more forthright about what he's trying to do. And you learn that he is trying to, through making this woman eat raw meat or
hypnosis, and all sadism, kinds of, and
he's trying to awaken this murderous
personality
that genetically has been passed down through this line.
Yeah.
He succeeds, and the Aunt Beatrice. Ends up
with an axe,
being all murdery. But instead of murdering
Curl,
she murders Uncle Paul.
Wah,
wah.
And just in the nick of time, the boyfriend arrives,
picks her up, carries her off, and we're left with them back in London. They're going to get married. She is beginning to get some use of her legs back, but. I think it's significant that
she's as rich as fuck.
Yeah, she's as rich as fuck, as they say in London. Especially in the upper class.
If you're in doctor school.
In doctor
Richer school. Than doctor school.
So, this book was forgotten. And
what book are we reading? It's not forgotten right now.
For the most part.
It was forgotten by us.
For the most part, forgotten books. Kind of deserve to be forgotten.
Okay, but you know what? There were some really good moments in this book.
So yeah, I will
name a few.
Well, let's begin. Go.
One moment. For one thing, I want to say that the subjugated Curl sort of reminded me of Stephen King's
Carrie.
No. Oh crap! The one with James Caan and...
Oh, Misery.
It reminds me of Misery a little bit.
What's the feeling of it. Annie Wilkes.
Yeah. It reminds me... Well, only that this person is paralyzed, kept in a bed, and then... And there's other things that are like this. Baby Jane is the same kind of idea.
Yep, exactly.
I don't know if there's other horror stories.
Well, there's another one. There's another one that we're going to be hearing about again real soon. What's her name? Somebody just won Best Director at Cannes Film Festival for a remake of The Beguiled.
I don't know. Never heard of it.
The Beguiled. You've seen this. The Beguiled was a movie starring Clint Eastwood as a Northern soldier who. Is wounded and finds himself being taken care of by a bunch of Southern belles, who he thinks this is great. You know, I'm a rooster in the hen house. All these beautiful young women, but slowly but surely he's completely isolated, and they, you know, all of their men have been killed by the Northern devils, and he is one of them, and so they start to torture him.
There we go.
But anyway, that movie will be coming out soon.
So. You know, so the increasing isolation of Curl was creepy.
Yeah,
they kill a cat. Yeah. She befriends this cat. It's her only sort of connection to life. And they kill it.
Yeah, I know.
It's just like killing a baby, killing an animal. It's a cheap, horrid thing. But it was effective.
It's effective and it's upsetting. And it's it wasn't done back in the '30s for the most part. You didn't do that to babies or cats.
Right.
In books.
So maybe that's where the
yeah, I mean this
splatterpunk thing comes from.
Yeah. Well, you keep talking. We'll address
it. So there was that part was creepy, the creepy part of her. And having to eat the raw meat.
Yeah, that was unpleasant.
There was something really creepy and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last few books we've read with these other authors have not been outright horror, but they've been this slow creep.
Yes.
And this sort of twisting of normal behavior. And that I think that's the thing. And then in the end with the axe, and you're like, oh my God, she is going to get it.
Yeah.
You know, and that part, the ending of the book, well, the very end, but the climax was creepy and scary.
Creepy and scary and kind of
gory.
And
it gave me some chills. And,
yeah.
No. So those parts I really... It was a very slow build-up, and you're not really sure where it's going. Mm-hmm. And the names are super obvious. And,
yeah.
Right? And
pretty much. I actually liked this book quite a bit. I was surprised because... I liked it very much because it was written so
straightforward.
It was very straightforward, but it was also really very well spoken. It was very British. Let me just read the first page here if I can manage to make it out here without my glasses. Actually, not the first page.
So you're gonna make me edit this. Is what's gonna happen?
There are two mysterious facts concerning myself, of which I was aware at an early age. I, though a child of poor parents, we'll talk again about the editing of this book, poor parents, was an heiress. I had a weird Uncle Paul who was not as other men. At least, I gathered quite clearly that he was not as other men, but for long enough, I lacked any special knowledge in what way he differed from his kind. When I was a little child, Mother made me a bogey of him, and used threaten as punishment to send for Uncle Paul, who would probably eat me, or run off with me, or flay me alive. Otherwise, I was, Mother told me often enough, almost without relations. So that's just the first couple paragraphs. Those are very clear, elegant, well-balanced sentences. It doesn't sound like it's a big deal, but it's a big freaking deal, especially...
You learn a whole lot in those few sentences.
Yeah, and especially in a pulp novel like this.
You also learn she's going to survive because she's writing it.
Yeah, and it also presages the entire plot of the book.
Yes.
Dancing Swatara Press, God love you. I'm so glad you made these books available, but you just scanned these things and you didn't proofread them.
unless pool parents is a Britishism.
It could be. It could be a pool parents. Yes, like Claypool.
I come for pool parents.
Anyway, so the writing style was very pleasurable for me to read. I really loved it. Just like sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph. It was very, it was, I'm not saying it's like reading Jane Austen or anything like that, but it's way better than reading like Robert E. Howard or freaking H.P. Lovecraft.
Ooh.
Oh, I said that. I went there.
Ooh.
I went there.
Wow.
So that was good. And I'm very much looking forward to reading these next two books simply for that.
Were there any parts that creeped you out than other than the ones I mentioned?
Oh, just feeling the walls closing around this girl.
It's gothic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very gothic. Yeah. When she wakes up without the use of her legs, that was pretty dark.
Yeah, it was.
And just the
her horror was palpable.
Yeah.
Palpable.
Yeah.
Palpable.
Yeah. It really came through the book. So what I was saying before that, you know, forgotten books deserve to be forgotten. These are an exception. These books deserve to be remembered. And
why?
Because they're better than your average book from this time that deserves to be forgotten. I mean, there are hundreds. I mean, we read. Okay, so not too long ago, we were reading the books by William Sloan.
Yes.
And which in some ways were very similar to these in an American idiom. And because he had two novels that were worth reading, we said we had fill three episodes, so we decided to find those three plays.
Right.
And those plays were shit.
Yes,
they were. They deserve to be forgotten.
Yes.
In fact, reading them, you know, dropped your opinion of the author based on his first two books a little bit. These books, this book so far, you know, we've only read one, makes me want to read more by R.R. Ryan. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying it's high literature or anything like that, but I'm saying it's a cut above your average pulp novel. It's a couple of cuts above your average pulp novel.
Well, I think it's definitely better than Russell's The Case Against Satan.
I would say that, yeah. No, I would agree.
I mean, you have much more character.
Yeah.
Well, it's tight, and mm-hmm. It kind of pushes in.
Yes.
And you get a first person narrative.
So yeah.
You, not the whole time, but there's a couple points where it veers off from the first, from the main character in it, like the medical student's friend. It goes to
the doctor school guy.
The doctor school friend who's in lawyer school.
I should say, apparently this shape of a story, the innocent young woman in peril, the sadistic villain, that is the model. That's what all three of these books do.
Oh,
apparently.
Okay.
So we'll see if we get tired of that or if author Ryan gets better and better at it and.
I thought the twist was interesting that the man, I mean, the boyfriend does come at the end, but he doesn't rescue. It's the aunt.
Uh-huh.
It's the aunt who's going against this nature that's being drawn out of her.
Yeah.
And we're not sure if it's supernatural or if there's possession or what this is.
Yeah, so.
But it's because the aunt and the girl had a relationship and there was a kindness there.
Mm-hmm.
The aunt, you know, the aunt kind of grabs her own power.
Yeah.
In the end. So it's proto-feminism.
I will say that. I will say that as well.
I don't know. That's farting in the back. Making fart noises in the back of the classroom.
Again, it's what we do. So these three books that we're talking about, one of each was on the Wagner's three lists. I think this one was on the non-supernatural one.
There's a suggestion of a supernatural element.
So I think he might have just been forcing it so he could get one of these books on each one of the lists. The next one that we'll be reading, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is on the science fiction one, and then the last one is on the supernatural one because I think there's a supernatural element right up front.
Mm.
So we'll see.
Okay. Well, is there anything about this book that you read that's coming back to you?
Did I wet a widwa?
Is there anything about this book that you read a month ago that's starting to come back to you?
Not very much, no.
All right. So I think
I've literally read 6 books since this.
All right. So I think we need to just drink. So
it's cocktail time. I think it's cocktail time. We'll talk more about our line in future episodes. All right.
So let's tell the folk, what we're drinking.
All right. So whenever we read anything British, we always try to do British things. So our first idea of this which was such a good name for a drink that I'm going to tell it to you, even though we didn't make it.
All right.
It's called I Can't Feel My Legs. I encourage our listeners to come up with your own drink called I Can't Feel My Legs.
In the good way.
In a good way. But in the actual drink that we're making, we're going to call this High Tea. High Tea. And it's a version of Long Island Iced Tea.
Right.
Long Island Iced Tea is basically like a whole bunch of half shots with some little, with 2 different kinds of soda, poured over ice, throw in a lemon. So we're going to switch out one of those half shots. So instead of vodka, we're going to put in this new Japanese Earl Grey liqueur called Returner. It's $25. You might have to pay a little bit to get it over from Japan, unless you're already in Japan, in which case just go down to the corner and buy some. Returner. It's an Earl Grey liqueur. If you are not inclined to order international booze, you could probably mock some up yourself. Just
steep Earl Grey and vodka.
In vodka, add some
syrup. For a long
syrup.
Time.
Yeah. Like 2 weeks, maybe. Yeah.
Keep turning the bottle, shaking the bottle.
Yep.
Strain.
Take the tea out, put some simple syrup in there. Wait for another 2 weeks, and you're good to go.
So, it's a half a shot of that.
Half a shot of that.
It's a half a shot of gin.
Yep.
Half a shot of tequila.
Half a shot of rum.
Half a shot of triple sec.
And then a shot of sour mix, and a shot, and just a splash of cola on the top.
Mix it up,
and just drink it.
You can probably only drink one.
just the one. That's why we call it high tea.
All right. Yeah, let's go. Well, let's go down to the basement.
Let's pick up the next book.
Hey, we're down in the basement picking up the next book.
All right. This one has a really good cover, doesn't it?
It looks very Cthulhu-esque.
Yeah, it really does. Except there's a heffalump back there. And this weird thing. Anyway, so the next book that we're reading by R.R. Ryan is called Freak Museum.
Woohoo! Which is good.
Which is a very intriguing and enticing
title. Apparently there's an octopus involved or a squid of some sort.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Probably a squid. So, Freak Museum. Let's read that.
Okay.
Out of here.
We'll promise to remember it more.
We will do our best.
All right. Look at this. We're out of the basement. So!
So, drink, book, anything else about the R. Ryan at this early juncture, or should we table it for the next episode?
Let's table it.
All right, let's table it. What else has been going on with you, sir?
Well, I can't remember the name of it,
uh-huh.
And I can't remember who wrote it, but I found...
But it had a blue cover.
No, I found in the library yesterday a book of Dracula. So apparently this book was... you know, the book Dracula was sent to a bunch of different countries and edited for it. And somebody took the book, re-edited it. This was back in the 20s. Re-edited it, added different scenes, tightened it up, expanded characters, added characters, and basically rewrote Dracula. And this book was found and is now published.
Wow.
So I grabbed it at the library, and I was going to bring it to show it to you, and I completely forgot as I was running out the door.
No problem.
I'm going to read it.
That's fantastic.
Because I think I'm intrigued.
That's fantastic. I'm very interested in that, too.
Yeah.
I've read Dracula 4 or 5 times now.
I wrote
a master's paper on it. At any rate, I have a book report as well.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed reading the Ray Russell books.
Yes.
Because I don't know, I must have
skeezy 70s vibe.
Yeah. I like the skeezy 70s vibe. So, I went out and bought his last novel. Which is It's not hard to find because even though there's only 500 printed copies of it, nobody wants them. So you can just get them online for $25. So I went to a local sci-fi bookstore here, and they had a signed copy, one of these 500 signed copies on the shelf. It's been there since 1992.
Dusty.
So I bought it. Yeah, it was a little dusty. And I read it, and it was pretty good.
Oh, was it better than...
Incubus?
Yeah.
I would say marginally.
Oh.
It was very similar.
Okay.
And it was about a witch.
Oh.
It was about witches.
Oh.
But the main character was the same main character in Incubus.
Oh.
I can't remember his name now, even though I read that one only two weeks ago.
Teddy.
We'll call him Teddy. No, it wasn't Teddy. It was Jake or something. I think it was Jake. Anyway, he's in L.A. He's, you know, 12 years older, 15 years older. They make some references to the events of Incubus very obliquely. But he, again, is finding himself with another student in Hollywood.
This is really before all the rules, the college rules, right?
Oh, my God. Anyway, so, but this book sank like a freaking stone. It was published in 500 boxed, numbered, signed copies that went out. And if you go online right now and search for Ray Russell, Absolute Power, which is a terrible title, you will be able to find many copies online that you can buy for the same price that I paid for mine, $25, $26. Some people try to gouge you for 80, 90, 100. Don't just, they're all the
same. Just get some Absolute Vodka then if it comes to that.
There you go. But but it has never been reprinted. So that there's only these 500 copies out there, which is pretty funny. And then he passed away 6 years later.
Because it was a bad book?
Oh, I don't know. I think he'd made his money.
But you liked it?
I liked it.
A lot of things, though. I can trust that.
Yeah, no, I am really not a person you want to talk to about book recommendations. But I have a lot more fun.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that's true.
So, anyway, we won't be podcasting on that, but it was an interesting book. It was kind of fun. And it had the same shape. It had like a, it was like a whodunit. You know, you're getting all this evidence and there's red herrings piling up. And then you have to figure out who the person is. I would have been surprised in this case if you had figured out who the actual witch was.
Was it a woman?
It was a woman.
Always is.
Yeah. But anyway, that's my book report.
All right. Make a diorama. next time.
I'll make a diorama. My mom will help.
That's all I got.
All right. That's all I got, too.
So what should we do with this short and dirty podcast?
Short and dirty. Let's take an axe and sharpen it really sharp.
And then cut off our own heads.
Cut off our own heads and stuff our mouths with garlic.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm in my